This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Darlings, Lillian here. Oh, I'm exhausted. You can imagine. Anyway, just to say, if you're looking for a few Christmas bits and pieces, have a look at the Dumpty Dum shop. It's quite fun, really. I wonder if they ship to Costa Rica.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. This is Native Heath. My Archer's vintage dates from the introduction of Mark Hebden, I think. I've been enjoying Dumpty Dum for some time, particularly Lucy Freeman's synopsises, but great. This is my first contribution. I thought there could be a chiptune Archer's theme, so here it is, Sidney Torch's version of Barwick Green as performed on a Game Boy.
It does go on a bit, so I'm just going to go up and put my roast potatoes back in the oven. Come fade it down a bit and just talk among yourselves. Fade that away, because I need to go and put a Christmas tree up. This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I am the machine that goes beep quite a lot, that is Robert Wilson, and with me I have the unchanged catheter that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of Lillian's bedside vigil, folks, is you. This week's Dumpty Dum is from Native Heath, although, by the sound of it, he stole it off the internet. Lucy, if someone else wants to steal something off the internet and send it to us, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction, or show someone in a coma photos on your phone, then call us on 0203-031-3105, or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and for doing the Dumpty Dogs, Shambridge for her voices, and to Derek Lone in the back bedroom. Derek is a bit bruised as he had quite an eventful hunt ball. They did get the bucking bronco working and he got tossed off.
Oh, dear. On this week's episode, we hear views from Andrea Melling, who says Ambridge is in the clear, and I think I agree with you. Ben Johnson, who believes Matt's been misrepresented. I don't think I agree with you. Witherspoon, who has his deer stalker on, and Vicky Cole, who thinks Kerry's having a lovely time. But first, let's brace ourselves for Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
This week was sponsored by the Hunt Ball and the words, "What's the matter?" But first, the gripping story of murder at Gay Grables. It was a dark and stormy night as the haughty Justin Elliott and his flighty fiancée Lillian walked up the drive to the imposing Gay Grables. I don't know how long the drive is up to Gay Grables, but Justin and Lillian sounded like they were scrunching through a gravel pit. Maybe it was shingle. Is Gay Grables by the sea? You'd have thought they'd have mentioned the sea views in the marketing. They want to get Roy onto that. Anyway, Matt spent the evening acting pissed very badly and leaving increasingly rambling messages on Lillian's phone, while Ian got all judgy-judgy on her. Who was that on your phone, Lillian? Oh, darling, it was just someone about an accident they said I'd had. I got rear-ended. Well, lucky old you, said Ian. Tiger was insistent that his suitcases were stored safely behind the bar. 27 boxes of Ecuadorian Viagra have a significant street value, you know. Hard currency. Really, really hard. Justin came roaring into the pub like a vengeful, wrath-filled sheep. He spent hours hunting for his love rival. Well, actually, he just poked his head round the door and said, Kenton, have you seen Matt? I'm a little bit cross with him. And Kenton said, no, go away. So he said, righto. Anyway, turns out someone had backed over Matt. He was under the hedge, lying on the ground, said Lillian. Oh, so he has had some sort of accident, said Justin brilliantly. No, Justin, Matt just fancied breaking his own rib and kipping in a hedge. Harassment of the Yard arrived in his pedal car, adjusting his plastic hat and shouting, Nino, Nino. He began interrogating Justin. He was on his own, so he couldn't play good cop, bad cop, so he just stuck with thick cop, thick cop. Justin, did you run Matt over? But did you, though? Oh, please tell me. Meanwhile, at the incredibly well-staffed Borchester General, Matt has been placed in a medically induced coma. Lillian put herself in a gin-induced coma to keep him company and sat by his bedside. But I need you too, Lillian, said Justin sulkily. I can't find the golden syrup and I've got my finger stuck up the tap again. Turns out Matt wasn't actually in a coma. It was just Lillian rabbiting on about Ruby was so bloody boring. He feigned sleep in the hope that she'd sod off and he could have a look at the Racing Post in peace. You look so small lying there, darling, said Lillian. She made it sound as if Jimmy Cranky was in the bed. However, all Matt's efforts to get shot of her were useless, as it turned out even Matt in a coma was more interesting than Justin. Eventually, he had no choice but to pretend to wake up, which he did apparently without his teeth. Jenny, darling. He did, didn't he? It's weird. Jenny, darling, who I'm beginning to think is actually missing part of her brain, seemed not to be able to grasp at all why people seemed a little distracted. But she did a bit of thinking and said brightly, actually, it's probably quite good that Matt's been run over by a car and nearly killed, because otherwise it might have been someone I care about and that would not have been as much fun. She's slowly turning into Queenie from Blackadder. I am a little bit bored of Matt and I don't care if he dies. An unlikely friendship has been struck up between Piggy Woolley and Nolitando. Well, I say unlikely. Piggy revels in anyone who's horrible to her relations, even if they are one of them. Jenny Darling's worried as Piggy is giving away all her stuff. Her mantelpiece is like the Gobi Desert. Not a present from Eastbourne to be seen. No China shepherdesses, no Franklin mint, no little tiny gold carriage clocks or plates that they advertise on the back of the Telegraph. Even Jack's ashes have gone to help the aged, but what the aged are meant to do with them, I don't know. But there's good news. Auntie Christine has won the Rhine cruise. It is very unwise for a woman made entirely of cardboard to go on a river holiday, I feel. It was Halloween night at the Bull. There were special cocktails, the flat mat, the Jaya Cody special, which leaves you only being able to see out of one eye, and the Tracy Horribin, which goes down very easily. Apparently, Alice enjoyed each and every one of them, both going down and coming back up. Please don't let Alice have a proper drink problem that we have to do something about. I'm not sure I can bear listening to her add recovering alcoholic to her list of accomplishments. Outside of the murder mystery, over at Brooker's, Pip was worried about the cows. In hindsight, she thinks putting them all on the 5-2 diet was a mistake, as although their genes now do it much more easily, they're all dying of hunger. Mm. She dithered for a bit, and Hootie chipped in with, whatever you decide will be the right decision, Pip. We all trust you implicitly, apart from about men. You're a bit shit at men. And money, too. In fact, you're rubbish at everything except cows. And come to think of it, one of them kicked you in the head. Anyway, I'm sure you'll make the right decision. A chilly start for Adam and Ian. Ian was wandering around in the front garden in his dressing gown, like Harvey Weinstein, holding auditions. Too soon, pleading with Adam to have lunch with him. I promise I won't talk about wombs, he said. Oh, all right then, said Adam. But I'm going to get rat-assed because I've just realised I'm 50 and I still sound like a melodramatic teenager. And the winner of the week's most pointless scene was, ta-da, Lexi shopping with Roy. There was no point to it. Par de point. The only thing it did tell us was that Lexi and Roy are the kind of couple that have artificial flowers and 17 pointless little cushiony pillows on their bed that have to be chucked all round the room before you can get into bed and then faithfully connected the next morning to be replaced in a little pyramid of utter futility. So, The real question on everyone's lips is who flattened Mattened? Was it Adam in his quad bike singing along to the Mamma Mia soundtrack and unaware that the big lumpy thing at the side of the road was the saviour of the Costa Rican racing industry? Was it Latif, the man from the milk tray advert, gliding along in his Range Rover? Was it Justin, who mistook him for a lamppost and thought, fuck it, I'll hit it anyway? No! It was Hilda Ogden at the wheel, being directed by a one-eyed horse with a map and Ruby sitting shotgun. The end.
When I say this, usually I'm lying, but that was very good this week. Oh, dear.
Do you know, there is no way now anyone can say that without it being a horrible, horrible thing to hear. So we have to just scrap it completely.
Marvellous. Well, you... Oh dear, it gets filthier and filthier as the weeks go past. And that's why I'm enjoying it more and more. Oh, yes. Goodness me, what a week in Ambridge it's been, though. It started off with a bang, or was it a crash, or a slump, or something like that. I didn't understand. One thing I didn't understand is how prone was Matt? Because one minute someone said he was in the hedge, like last week's condom, you know. I think they meant on the verge. He wasn't in a hedge halfway up, was he? He was in, and then he was in a ditch. He was in a ditch. Yeah, exactly. Head first in a ditch with his legs waggling. Then he was in a ditch, and then he was by the side of the road. And you think, fucking hell, they've been moving him around. It's just.
I think, in my mind, what happened was because you heard him going, "Can your head
crawl down to the side?" Yeah.
Yeah, and so he tried to get up the bank. The car clipped him or hit him, and he fell into the verge and rolled under the hedge. You know, hedges have like a bank down.
Yeah, okay. So
that's what I
He think. Fell into all the plastic bags and dirty nappies that you usually find at the bottom of a hedge.
Okay. On Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Dead hedgehogs, rappers, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Is there a KFC in Borchester? I don't know. Who knows? So...
Where else does Tracy Horobin eat? Of course there is.
I've been known to dine with the Colonel myself from time to time, but not for a while. It's a long time since I've had...
Dine with the Colonel.
It's a long time since I've put my bone in a greasy bucket. But there we are.
How long have you had that waiting?
10 years. 10 years. Ah, dear. There we are. I never knew when I'd be able to use it, but there we are. I'm now blushing ever so slightly at being discovered. Ah, it came to me in a flash, as they say. But yeah, there are many, many, many suspects to this knocking down. First of all, I don't think it was deliberate. I mean, at first I thought it was deliberate, but I listened back again today when I was out on my bike ride, and there was a distinct skid. Now, either that was braking to avoid or swerving to hit him.
Yeah. Yes.
They must have seen him, because he said, turn your headlights down. They must have seen him in those full beams.
Yeah. Yeah. So the suspects are, in reverse order, Nick Grundy roaring home to see if her daughter was feeling better. Yeah. You know, because she kept saying, no, Matt, I want to go, when he was going. I loved that bit of dialogue, by the way. It was beautiful. It was so good.
Which bit?
When she was going, I don't want to put your cases in the bottle store. And he was going, all right, five are in the firework jar then. And, you know, and she said, no, it's not about that. Because she was saying to him, give us some money. And he said, you want me to help you, but you won't help me. And it was just lovely. It was just the way the way Matt thinks. It was just gorgeous. I love little unexpected bits like that, that they could just cock up and rush through, but they don't. It was lovely. Anyway, we have Nick on her way back. We have Adam just in a fit of pique. Who else could it possibly be?
It is not Justin. It cannot be Justin. He was in. He was going the wrong way, so to speak, for a start. And it's just too obvious. Yeah, he was already in the bull.
It was the obvious
road between the bull and Grey Gable, so...
Yeah.
Although imagining it coming from Grey Gables, but maybe it was going back.
Yeah.
But why, if he was walking to Grey Gables, he wouldn't be facing into the undipped headlights, would he? So that's the way I'm looking at that.
But if you're walking away from bright headlights, they still make you you turn round and look at them and go, oh, blimey, turn your headlights down, mate.
True, yeah, yeah.
You can imagine that sort of wince or him sort of covering his face.
Fair enough. Another theory kicked into the hedge. Along with the condom and Matt, yes.
Along with Matt and the dead hedgehogs. I think...
My personal theory is it's one of the hoodlums. It's one of the unknown hoodlums that we have yet to...
And what is in this suitcase?
Exactly what's in the suitcase. Well, I think it's... my theory is it's all of Hugo Melling's money. And Matt has nicked Hugo Melling's money. And maybe it's Hugo Melling... Or one of his
in the
goods.
Suitcase.
In the suitcase. No. That's my thing.
But sure, but money's not heavy.
It is if it's in pound coins. He's nicked it from all the vending machines.
It's a bloody fireworks money. That's what it is. He's tipped it all back out again, straight into his briefcase.
No, but if you have... Right, money is made
of... But it could be a total red herring, couldn't it? Because as he said, she said, what's in your suitcase, darling? And he said, oh, it's my life, you know. And if you're leaving the country, you want all your stuff, you know.
When my mum... Just to lighten the mood a bit, when my mum was in intensive care, she looked like a mummy. She was head to toe in bandages, like a comedy mummy. With a tracheotomy and all this kind of stuff on the BP machines and things. But when she woke up, the first thing she was going on about was her bag in the sitting room, and that we needed to make sure that the bag was safe.
Yeah.
And her purse and her bank books and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's a common trait.
Yeah.
Later we found out she had a secret bank account with 20 grand in it, but there we are.
That was stuck in a suitcase under her bed.
Yeah. So it's not unusual for people to obsess about these little things and worry about them when really it's inconsequential and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
So maybe that's that. There are lots of red herrings in this, aren't there? And it was interesting that Matt then said, it was an accident. There's no need to press charges or investigate it.
But that's just the police, isn't it? I mean, my friend who's a gangster has a problem with his neighbours who are behaving extremely badly and illegally, and they're being really, really, really unpleasant. Not particularly to him, to everybody. They're, you know, very, very antisocial. And I said to him, why don't you call the police? And he just looked at me as if I was on another planet, and he said, I wouldn't ever. He said, they know that. That's why they carry on doing it. Because he said, they know I would never, ever, ever call the police. So, and I think Matt's the same. It's just keep them out of it completely, so that if, you know, no strings may be sort of, no knots may be unravelled that you don't necessarily want unravelling. You know, you don't want anyone inquiring too deeply into anything, and particularly Matt.
Yeah, because there's always going to be something dodgy going on with Matt, isn't there?
Yes.
Very definitely. Okay.
So I don't think but I think this Adam business of him suddenly becoming very, I mean, he's always bloody tetchy, but tetchier than normal, you know, and being grumpy. I don't know whether, because there's obviously something he wants to say to Ian, and then he just said it was because he was 50, you know, that he's something that he's anxious about. There's just so many red herrings flying around. It's making me think actually it wasn't any of them.
Yeah.
And that he's just going to be a taxi driver, or somebody said on the Twitters, wouldn't it be ironic if he'd been run down by his own cab?
Driven by Rex, who is in Glasgow. So he's off.
It was funny. That was the first thing when it happened. Everyone said, Rex, where's Rex? And he said, no, he's in Glasgow. It's all right.
Well. Funny you should mention that, but I had a drink the other day, and it inspired me. And I thought, Toby, what about Toby?
Why would Toby want to do it?
Well, it wasn't done on purpose.
Oh, I see.
Toby hit him in the pickup truck. I don't know.
No, Toby would confess.
Because he's too thick to hide it.
Yeah, and he's too. He's a chancer, but he's not that bad, I don't think.
No. Anyway, what worries all me about revealed.
Nick is that Nick has suddenly come back into it after a long time off. Why has she come back?
Not I know who it is. Emma. I know Ooh. Who it is. Right, so
Kira.
Here we are. Right, so the only thing we heard of this driver was a door closing and a car driving off. It's fucking Kathy, isn't it?
Ah!
Because that's all we hear of her now. Case solved. We might as well start recording now. Have a lovely weekend, everybody. Bye! Speaking of which, before we get on to the caller-inners, I was sent, and you might have seen this on Twitter, I was sent a competition. And this has been organised by Claire Hopkins, who is the archivist of Trinity College here in Oxford. And she's, I don't know whether this is an annual thing, but she's compiled the Ambridge Christmas and New Year Predictive Quiz with 10 questions. And the prize for the winner is a bottle of your own choice. It won't be malt whiskey this year for Matt, I guess. And there are 10 questions, and you've got to predict what will happen in these scenarios. So question number one is, what will Adam and Ian argue about? Well, obviously it's going to be the baby, isn't it? The baby, whether it's coming, whether they're getting one or not. Number two, what will Kate buy Nolitandu for Christmas? The obvious answer is nothing. Number three.
It'll be something about Kate.
Oh, yes.
It'll be something like she's recorded her a meditation tape or something.
Yeah. Oh, God, that's awful. I'm of the age now where I'm very pleased to receive socks. Number three. I'm not lying. It's true.
Bless you.
As long as they're nice socks. I like nice socks. Number three. In whose arms will Pip spend New Year's Eve?
Toby.
Yeah, Toby. Number four. Who will be heard weeping alone?
Shula.
All right. Number five. Who will die?
Ooh.
Now, my friend...
Joe.
Okay, my friend said Lillian, and I had to order them out of the pub. Really? I ordered them out of the pub. I nearly cried at the very... This was before the whole Matt thing.
How much had you had to drink, Robert?
I think I was sober. Number six.
Robert. Yes.
Number six. Where will Ed and Emma eat Christmas dinner? Well, if Emma's...
On the floor of a pigsty with the moan about.
Number seven. Which...
It's all we're good for, Ed, eating on the floor of a pigsty.
Number seven. Which agricultural or farm-based enterprise will face a crisis?
Ooh, Bridge Farm.
Okay, yep.
Here's hoping.
Kefir. There'll be a tragic kefir explosion.
Put the kefir of God into you, yes.
Number eight, who will play the male and female leads in the Christmas show?
Roy and Lexi.
Exactly, that's what I'd go for. Number nine, who will suddenly depart the village?
Lillian.
Really? And number ten, who will appear unexpectedly?
Rob.
You may well be right. I'm putting my money on Charlie.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'd much prefer if it was Charlie. Yeah,
well, like I said before on this show, I've got a bit of a man crush on Charlie. I do, and I'm not joking. I do like... I don't know why. He's fucking boring. But I don't know. I quite like the sound of his voice. And then I looked him up, and he's good looking. So that does it to me. Even though I'm straight, I'm just an idiot, aren't I? I mean, all straight men are allowed, you know, a bit of man crush, aren't
we?
I mean, I'm not 100% straight. Who is? There we are. And the other thing that...
I have lots of lady crushes.
Well, you should buy a new bra, I suppose. and the other thing this friend said to me, Nula is her name, and this is a serious thing, and we were talking about the Archers. And what's going on, and we're talking about when we first started and, you know, what we liked about it. And she said that the Rob and Helen storyline actually made her realise that the relationship she was in was the wrong relationship to be in, and that she was being almost gaslighted by her current boyfriend, her then boyfriend. And it gave her the courage to say, no, this isn't good enough. I deserve better. And I was amazed. I think that was brilliant. And I did ask her permission to chat about this on Dumpty Dum.
Okay.
So we don't have to edit that out. Well, I thought that was amazing. So there you go.
Mm.
I've got nothing else to add to that other than...
Brilliant.
Right,
okay.
Shall we play some caller inners now?
Why not?
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
The first caller inner is Andrea Melling from Texas.
This is Andrea from Texas, dog walker. Haven't called in for a while, but I wanted to comment on the Matt hit and run, just to say it won't be any of the Archer's characters because we already did a criminal prosecution and trial very recently. So it'll either be Harrison failing to solve it again, or it will be a third party that isn't involved in the Archers. So although they've set it up like an Agatha Christie, it's going to be like that someone from left field that you could never have guessed. That's my idea about it anyway. Bye.
There you go. I think she's agreeing with us, really, isn't she?
Yeah. People have been saying on the Twitters, Andrea, I don't know if you have noticed, but they've been talking about Graham, that locum vet, who seems to just roar around Borsetshire causing chaos and mayhem. So whether he has added attempted manslaughter to his list of other cock-ups, I don't know.
Because he was on call, wasn't he? So
that's
interesting.
Yeah. And if you know, somebody who's in a rush, somebody who's heading out of the village to some sort of... crisis, but obviously because we don't know anything about him, we don't know if he's the sort of person who would stop or who would just... Because whoever it was definitely saw Matt because they stopped, didn't
they? Stopped, got out of the car, got back in and then sped off.
They gave him a prod and then...
There's going to be damage to the car, isn't there? So no one's mentioned damage to Justin's car or Adam and Ian's car. They would have noticed it. It's been a week now. You'd have noticed that.
Yeah.
Brian's car is in... to have some work done on it, but that's a red herring. It's not going to be Brian. He's got form for running over Bill the cat, but that's a different thing altogether.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, yeah, I'm with you, Andrea. I agree. But I am interested in this Graham theory because we've heard an awful lot about Graham for no reason. Do you know what I mean? You've always got to think... It's kind of like, when detectives always say follow the money to find out what the truth is. With Archer's character, it's follow the dialogue, really.
Yeah.
It's if a character suddenly reappears and is very chatty and you hear a lot about them and you think, why have you come back then? That's kind of the biggest giveaway always, isn't it? Which made me think that if it is a member of the village, then Nick is the most likely.
But
culprit.
If she is, then she's very cool about it.
Well, she said, "Do they think the driver was drunk?" Then she was asking Emma.
Mm-hmm.
So she's sort of interested. She's making a few inquiries as to where what the police thinks.
But if I'd knocked someone over, and I haven't, I just want to point that out. Officer,
you'd be a nervous wreck.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know me, I'm a nervous wreck when I can't get this bloody computer to work. So what? I can't keep a secret.
No.
Oh, I can, but anyway. But if I have to, if my life depends on it, I can keep a secret. If it protects me and stops me getting into trouble. But
well, that's exactly the type of that you've just described the person that drove away.
Yes.
Then.
Yes. Okay. Yes. There we are.
Let's move on to Ben Johnson.
Let's move on to Ben Johnson then. When I first saw that, there I thought, making that up, Ben Johnson. That's just a filler in, but no, it's not. Next week, William Shakespeare.
Hello. Is this thing on? Oh, I guess it is. Hello, it's Ben Johnson here.
Hello, Ben.
Hello.
Hello. Hello? Is this thing on? Oh, I guess it is. Hello, it's Ben Sorry, Johnson I switched him off by mistake. From my home in Norway. I'm a first timer, so I should probably tell you I live here with my family, three boys, and a dumpty dog called Fluffy. I'm on Twitter as Ben Johnson, and I'm also on Facebook a fair bit as well. I have been prompted to call in for the very first time because of a theory of mine. Now, I don't recall hearing any evidence that Matt Crawford is responsible for any of the dastardly things people are talking about. I don't think that he is slagging off the stables, and I don't think he's responsible for Latif finding another vet surgery. I have a suspicion that the scriptwriters are diverting us in one way, and that over the next few weeks, the truth will come out that Matt is actually just an innocent old man who likes twisting people's tails a bit, and he happens to be genuinely in love with Lillian. As to who the guilty party is, well, I reckon it was Shula what done it, albeit by accident, but then she got back in the car and drove away on purpose. And we're going to hear plenty of Shula anguish, unfortunately. Anyway, that's it for me. Bye for now. Ta-ta.
Shula, do you really think it's Shula? By the way, there was a large firework exploding behind me, if anyone was worried. It's not...
I thought you'd shot someone. I think... I like that theory. They've already said, oh, Shula's been... You know, that's when Jennifer was doing her... Why doesn't anybody want to play with me? When she was a bit cross because nobody seemed to be very cheerful after Matt was lying in the intensive care. She's already said that shoot, despite the hunt ball going better than any hunt ball has ever gone ever in the history of the universe, Shula's still got a face like a slapped ass. So that could well be because she's waiting to get caught, and it does fit Shula's MO that she doesn't face up to things and she does run away when there's something happening that will make her look bad. I can't really believe that Shula would do something that unchristian.
Whoever
for a start,
it is,
really.
Will get caught, and they'll go to prison for this. So it's not.
But I do. I do completely agree with Ben that not that Matt has been necessarily misrepresented, because he does, like, I think he goes beyond twisting people's tails, but way beyond. But you know, he did piss off to Costa Rica with Lillian's savings. But he does genuinely love.
He does.
Lillian.
He does.
I think. He genuinely does, and that kind of you know, when he had his chance to go, he couldn't do it, and he sort of floundered around, got drunk. There was a lot of internal saboteur stuff going on, wasn't there? He was sort of deliberately missing his own flight and stuff. And
he really definitely. And what was it? Someone said, was it someone that said it last week? Or was it? No, it was the interview with Kim Durham, and he'd said that, maybe I mentioned this last time, I can't remember, and he'd said that, you know, Matt has obviously had a very damaged upbringing, and Lillian is the only person in the world that he actually cares about and loves. And I think that's true. Which is really sad, actually, when you think about it. I know it's a made-up character, don't worry, I haven't gone bonkers, but I can't imagine that in my own life, only having one person I care about.
Well, that's nice. That shows that you're a healthy person.
Yes, I am.
In between the anxiety and the lunacy. Right, should we have Witherspoon now?
Go on then.
Greetings, Lucy, Robert, Yoko Bear, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. It's Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, assuming the role of Dr. Watson to all of you Sherlock's, Poirot's, Miss Marple's, Vera's, and Jessica Fletcher's. Let's chat a bit about comas. Did you know that the most commonly used coma evaluation scale in the world is called the Glasgow Coma Scale, created in 1974 by two neurosurgeons, one Scottish and one English, working at the University of Glasgow? I hope Matt's doctors used it. I was confused by one medical issue. Matt was put into a medically induced coma, which, as the term implies, doctors create to protect the brain while it's healing by giving the patient some heavy-duty anesthesia medications. While I'm not a neurologist, I'm not sure that Matt would have been able to start emerging from a medically induced coma on his own, as did occur. Then, as Zoe Picton pointed out on Facebook, Matt came out of the coma and was corpus mentis all too quickly. There is actually a term called the soap opera coma, a 2005 article in the British Medical Journal based on research from the University of Pennsylvania reviewed the outcomes of the comas experienced by 64 characters in 9 American soap operas between 1995 and 2005. 89% of them fully recovered, and on the day they emerged from the coma, 86% of these patients had no evidence of limited function or disability. The author's conclusions, the portrayal of coma in soap operas is overly optimistic. I do love medicine. Now, I haven't even mentioned Lillian and the Florence Nightingale effect. As you may recall, this syndrome occurred in and was explicitly mentioned in Back to the Future and has been quite evident this week. Lillian went from ready to see the back of Matt on Sunday to being a gushing girl at his bedside. But will it continue when she learns of his further criminal activities? I doubt it. Well, we'll see. Talk to you all soon.
It does raise some interesting questions, that. By the way, I did know about the Glasgow coma scale. And have you heard of the Bristol scale?
That's poo.
Oh, all right, you have then.
Do you know what the Glasgow coma test is? They headbutt you, and if you flip, they know that you're not in a coma.
Oh, I knew something like that was coming, because I was desperately thinking of a similar joke. Yeah, most Glaswegians are in a medically induced coma themselves anyway, aren't they, of a Friday night? I'm not one to talk.
I think it's kind of highlighted Lillian and Matt's codependency.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, if we're gonna head down this sort of therapeutic language, because the second, you know, she just didn't give a flying toss about Justin, did she?
No.
She just said there wasn't any lying, there wasn't any Justin, darling, I must just pop in and see Matt. She said, no, I will be at the hospital, and he said, oh, Lillian, I don't want you to go, and she said, no, I'm going, and that's it, you know. And she didn't pause for a second. She just found her handbag and left and didn't come back, you know.
How do you think you'd behave in that situation?
What, with Matt? What do you mean?
If you were... Well, you must be able to... You're not Theresa May. You can answer hypothetical questions. If you were in that situation, would you go and see Matt? I'd go and see him, I guess, but...
Well, it would if you. I think things like that just put the way you react to it makes your own. It cuts through all the bullshit, doesn't it? It suddenly makes your feelings very, very evident. So it makes your mind up for you, basically. I think a situation like that. So if you were thinking, right, my rational brain is saying I should do this, but my heart is saying I should do that. When that person is then threatened in some way, then the heart just takes over completely.
Yeah. And I'd say the smart money, and by that I mean mine, is that Justin will be the one that calls off the wedding now.
Mm. Yeah.
It's not going to happen. The wedding's not going to happen. You predicted it. It, you know, hardly Nostradamus, but it's certainly not going to happen now. Is it?
More like Nosferatu, yeah, to be honest. I think Justin's just... He's just coming out of this so badly. You know, when he was going wistfully, he reminded me of some E.L. Wistie wandering around the village going, I used to do boxing, you know, I'd quite like to hit Matt quite hard. You know, what do you think? Oh, sit down, you silly old fart. It just sounded a bit pathetic, really. He's not, and he's just sulky.
Yeah.
You know, and he doesn't understand what's going on. He does really, 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 really and truly. He knows that... If he was in a similar accident, Lillian had probably put letting the dog out before she went to see him in the hospital. You know, it would kind of it wouldn't be the same thing at all. Her and Matt are just on some sort of, I was going to say crash course, which is ironic, but they are on they're sort of tied together because of they're the only two that understand each other.
Yep, absolutely. I don't really have much to add to that other than the. Where's it going to go? It's just, but I don't see, how is this going to pan out? So Justin
I know. Does he leave? Does what?
And then what does Matt do? Does Matt stay in or does Matt go back to wherever he was going to go? Ecuador, Costa Rica, Lidl, wherever he was heading? I don't know. Time will tell. And how long is this story arc?
Do you know, I actually found myself thinking, I hope those flights were insured.
Yeah, I was thinking that, you know. I can just imagine the poor person on the tannoy at Heathrow.
This is the last call for Mr. Matt Crawford flying to Ecuador.
Well, there we are. Well, I don't think they do that because he wouldn't have checked in. But we might have checked in online. So he would have checked in online. Oh, my God. Terrible. Anyway, shall we hear from Vicky Cole in Kenya?
Yes, hello, everybody. Yes. It's Vicky Cole in Kenya here. Slightly husky this morning. Sorry, we had a party last night. I called in a couple of weeks ago, but I think I must have missed the deadline to be included in the show. But basically what I was saying was that I was really bored with the whole Lillian, Matt, Justin triangle. Didn't care who she went off with. Just fed up with the whole thing. That's changed a little bit, obviously, with recent events. My boredom and fed upness is now reserved for Adam and Ian. I'm completely bored with their squabbling and lying and whining about everything. I've been a bit worried about their ages from when this baby business started. I do pity any child that is sired by these two. Although I suppose it's a good future storyline, a mixed up teenager in years to come, perhaps. But back to Matt and Justin and Lillian. I think the scriptwriters are having a lovely time with us, creating Archers meets St. Mary Mead. I think, Lucy, you've been flagging this for a long time, that everybody had a motive to do it. And I think the scriptwriters are just having a lovely time going along with that. Mm. So then we wonder who is going to be cast as the plucky amateur detective. I cast Lexi in this role with Roy as her bumbling sidekick. Cooperating or not with Harrison, I'm not quite sure about that bit yet. And my plot prediction is that the big Christmas reveal will be them all gathered together in the library at Grey Gables when Lexi reveals who done it. Okay, that's all, everybody. Hope everyone's well. Bye.
I'm looking forward to that episode. And actually, I was thinking when I was listening to the omnibus that really they shouldn't be doing Sleeping Beauty. They should have been doing an Agatha Christie play as the Christmas production. Yeah. And then the murderer, or not the murderer, the murderer in the play could actually be the person who's the driver of the car.
Yes.
And it's revealed at the same time at the end of the production. Wouldn't that be marvellous? But it's not going to happen.
Complicated and marvellous. Yes, it would. Vicky, I have to say, your idea of Roy as a bumbling sidekick is absolute perfection. Can you imagine anyone more like Sergeant Lewis from Inspector Morse, from Hastings, from Poirot, from who else was I thinking of? Miss Marple didn't have one. Watson, you know, Martin Freeman playing Watson to Benedict Cumberbatch. That kind of slightly always being half a beat behind and going, hey, what? I mean, Roy spends a lot of time going, huh? You know, in this sort of Scooby-Doo way. It would be absolutely perfect as the bumbling sidekick. He really would. He's got, his middle names should be Roy Bumbling Sidekick.
Did you hear that?
Yes, just perfect.
It was like a car bomb going off outside. Sorry, it is November the 5th as we record. So there are lots of people lighting the blue touch paper and retiring to a safe distance in the background.
Ah. Maybe. And also for people overseas that don't know this, obviously November the 5th is fireworks night in the UK. And it is, because we like to celebrate terrorism on a big scale. And also, but if you live in rural areas, urban areas, you're also still dealing with Diwali, which is another festival of light. So basically it's like 2.5 months of non-stop fireworks.
I'm not religious, but I do enjoy burning the odd cat.
So it just slightly increases on November the 5th, the sound of the Battle of the Somme going on in your back garden. So yes, that's what you're hearing.
Definitely. Well, that's it. We've come to the end of the caller inneries. I suppose we're... Oh, what?
Oh, we have a plot prediction via email from Olivia, who says, I'm beginning to think it was not Justin who started those rumours about Alistair in the stables. I think it was Justin. No, sorry. She's put Justin, but she meant Matt. I'm beginning to think it was not Matt who started those rumours about Alistair in the stables. I think it was Justin in a ploy to turn the village against Matt. Justin is really starting to show his true colours this week. I really hope it wasn't Adam who ran over Matt and that it was Justin all along. We shall see. Over and out. I don't think... See, we haven't really talked about Adam as a possibility, have we?
Well, I'm just ruling out any of the major characters because if like I said, it is, they're going down. I really can't see that happening as far as as far as Home Farm is concerned, because, I mean, that would really... I was going to swear then, as you know, I don't like to swear on Dumpty Dum, but...
What about if he does know, if Matt does know who did it, and he's going to use it against them to stay in the village? I know what you did, Brian, but I will be quiet. There's no need for me to say anything about it if you just...
Possibly. All will be revealed in the arc of the storyline, will it not? So, I don't know how long this storyline is going to be. Is it going to be another Helen and Rob?
And we're not still going to be talking about this in 2 years' time, are we? In which case, I'm going to jump out the window.
Don't
now.
Do that. I'll have to do the show with Royfield then.
Just be both of you pressing all the buttons at once.
Can you imagine? Can you imagine? Oh, well, there we are. Right,
I can't.
Time now to take a commercial break.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, Ruth here. And now the beef price has gone rocketing up for reasons no one's explained. We are minted here at Brookfield, rolling in the stuff. If you are too, you might consider chucking a bit towards Dumpty Dum. You can do it through patreon.com. Then you get all the extra stuff, apparently. Interviews and, you know, whatever it is they do. I don't know. I haven't got time to listen. Too busy trying to wrestle Jill into a home. Bye.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Yoko Bear here with the social media roundup for the week. It's been a bit of a quiet week in Ambridge, really, hasn't it? Not. Been quite an exciting week, hasn't it? Call blimey. So let's delve straight in. Who did it? Who do we think? Well, over on the forum, Purple Pumpkin says, so is Matt the victim of all the speeding drivers that we've been told about? I think that might be, you know, that's quite a good possibility, because the whole Speedwatch storyline, I think it's been building up to something. Whereas Fat Friend on the forum says that thinks it's something to do with his dodgy race course. And do you know what's in the heavy suitcases? Shergar. Yes, there was also a very good tweet that somebody said that all the horses from the stable, Shula and Alistair Stable, was in the suitcases, which made me laugh. But I mean, also on Facebook, there's been lots of chat about it. Audrian Delgado Covarrubias says, I think it was Brian. He got a taste for it when he ran down Peggy's cat, now has graduated to running down grown men. Oh, that's a bit of a worry, isn't it? Yes, God. Do you think he's got it in him? I think he's too prim and proper when it comes down to it. I don't know, maybe. Kate Lahr made a serious point, which she said that I'm just pissed off with all still more character transplants. Matt wouldn't have got that drunk. Ian wouldn't have got into that conversation with Justice. And all that bollocks about defending Lillian's honour. Words fail me. So, yeah, possibly. I kind of agree with that a little bit. There was a lot of kind of acting out of character, I felt. Barbara Danielson reckons it was teenagers high on mushrooms. Yeah, quite possibly. Luke Hannington agrees about the culmination of the Story Watch storyline, but they will take a long time to work it out and much suspicion will be thrown about. Yeah, a lot of other people said this, that maybe it is just an accident, but the repercussions through the different characters are going to be great. Tom Williams says, I think Adam taking the car was a red herring, as was Justin in the pub. Tom is his prediction. I'm not sure. Maybe. Where was Tom at the time? Mind you, that he was unaccounted for, wasn't he? So possibly, yes, put him on the suspect list. Dave Harding thinks it's Adam. He recently bought a bigger and more powerful quad bike from Josh, especially for the job. I think it was a car, wasn't it? I don't know. Could it have been a quad bike? What do people think? Chris Walsh has come out with a marvellous theory, in my view. I was thinking Matt took out life insurance policy with Lillian as a benefactor and then stepped into the road as a final love gesture, showing that Matt, exit stage left, really is the kind-hearted soul after all. Chris then qualified that by saying, really, that is where my deluded head took me. Yeah, it is a little bit deluded, maybe, but I kind of like that theory. Marion Gray said, it's Halloween, so it could have been the ghost of Nigel Pargeter. Oh, revenge from beyond the grave. Wouldn't that be great? We also asked the question earlier in the week before this happened, do you think there'll still be a Christmas wedding in Ambridge? And I think that's kind of been superseded. But Zoe Picton came in with a bit of an off-tangent point, but here's a good point. The size of a village, for the size of the village, an inordinate number of Ambridge residents seem to end up in intensive care. Yeah, Georgina Caldwell reckons that's because Midsummer is next door. Do you reckon the Midsummer murders are kind of migrated to Borsetshire? Possibly. Ben Johnson thinks the only wedding bells will be just Shula tugging at Alistair's control collar. But back to the theories. John O'Crow said it's Latif. He met with Matt recently and they could have had a falling out. Yes, there's something about those suitcases, isn't that? I'm desperate to know what's in those suitcases. Andy Bent, and again, this is a theory that I love, it would turn out that Jill assaulted him with a flapjack in revenge for being vile to St. Shula, then Pip ran over him to cover it up for a gran. Yeah, I think, I tell you what, Jill, as we found out with that demonstration, she's got hidden depths. I reckon she could be capable of it. Meg Edge Goose Cubbly said the dialogue between Nolotandu, Peggy and Hilda was interesting. Interesting, just showing a more interesting side to her. Yeah, I think Nolotandu was actually fleshed out a little bit this week. But a lot of people thought that she was basically a bit of a spoiled brat. But a lot of people came to her defence and said, yeah, she's a spoiled brat, but she's a teenager, and it's kind of what they're like. As John Tyre said, brat who needs a firm hand, but paradoxically typical of most teenagers. Helen Sampson, you've gone really kind of hard line. Her post just said, brat, the culvert would be a good ending. Oh, I'm not sure. I kind of begin to like her this week. I like the way she bonded with Peggy. But then also as well, we spoke, last thing we're going to talk about is, does Alice have a drink problem? Because let's face it, she got twatted in the pub, didn't she? Zoe Taylor said, or maybe she doesn't have a drink problem. Maybe she's got a problem which needs drink to make it go away. I mean, she's married to Chris. What bloody problem could you have? Joanne Shuan says, only in that she frequently binge drinks, like a lot of many people in the UK, and seems to think she's not had a good time unless she gets rat faced. Yeah, she was a bit kind of full on, really, wasn't she, in the pub about it not coming up to party standards. Joe DeBank also said, yes, I thought that, one of those quotes, but I don't put vodka on my muesli, therefore it's not a problem situations. Oh, Joe, you don't put vodka on muesli. Everyone knows it's gin. But Christine Armstrong thinks they're laying the groundwork for a storyline of a high-functioning alcoholic. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, maybe this is kind of the beginning of her and the end of her and Chris. They won't make it because, as Joanne Shawn also said, Chris is going to... There's only so much hair-holding Chris is going to put up with before he realises he and Alice want different things and that their relationship is doomed. I think that's a possibility. And I just want to officially go on record and say, Chris, if you're going to be single, I'm available. Right, that's me done. Quite a long one this week. So that is social media roundup. See you on the Facebook, see you on the forum. Have a good week, and let's see what happens this week. All right then, bye.
A quick note from Royfield here. He's impressed upon me that we have to mention this, so we will. There's a Dumpty Dum meetup in San Francisco, and it's on Wednesday, the 15th of November, between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. at Marianne's, which is at 360 Jesse Street in San Francisco. And we've even got the zip code here, if you want to put it in your sat nav, CA94103. So that's at Marianne's at 360 Jesse Street in San Francisco, and it's on Wednesday, the 15th of November, between 6 p.m. and 9 p.m. I haven't looked up what Marion's is.
Why not? Yeah, let's just turn up. I mean, if we both turned up.
Hang on, I'll just.
Can we go on holiday, Robert?
Well, I'm off until Thursday. What? But that's not next week.
We can't get to San Francisco and back by Thursday.
Oh, God, it took me 2 weeks to get over the bloody jet lag last time. Anyway, Lucy.
Exactly. I'm not going on holiday with you being all jet lagged and miserable. You'd be no fun.
I'm no fun when I'm not jet lagged as well. Lucy. Time for tweets of the week, I think, don't you?
Yes. Okay. Yes. James Jeffries. Hello, James. I love James. With respect to Matt Crawford, me and the 7-year-old have just been thrown out of the John Lewis women's changing rooms. James, I do not want to know what you were attempting to do in that. Were you trying to prove a point? I don't know. Anyway, Buggy Swires. I saw the headline, Fallon resigns. Thought, ooh, does this mean Emma will take over the tea room? I need to challenge my priorities. Jane Bramley. Oh no, Matt is beeping. It sounds just like our bin lorry reversing. Maybe it was a bin lorry that hit him. Little Kim. Talking to Rainbow Warrior about Lillian. And her codependence relationship with Matt and how quickly that she just dropped everything to be with him. Soon as he's sitting up, she'll be straddling him with a bottle of gin in one hand and an unhooked bra in the other.
Yes, I can see that. Oh, good grief. They've even got the hoist equipment in hospital to enable that to take place.
And Sunday the 12th, he brought in a much needed bit of straightforward, business-like approach to this whole storyline. The irony is, if Justin had his way a year back, there'd have been a well-lit dual carriageway right through the village by now.
Well, this whole thing wouldn't have happened.
Uh,
That was good. I did like my favourite tweet of the week, and I said it was tweet of the week, but it wouldn't work very well because it was entirely visual. And it was about 30 seconds after Matt was run over, and I can't remember who tweeted it, tweeted a picture of a tiger rug. Flattened.
It was...
Who was that?
I can't remember, but there was another one that was... an operating theatre and a vet with an actual tiger, and that was Ginger Beans. That was brilliant. I've just noticed, actually, we had one other plot prediction from Welsh Witch, who said, "It seems to me that Justin is snaring a lot of villagers in his web. Adam doesn't really care about Lillian's happiness as much as he would losing the BL contract for Home Farm. The Bridge Farm lot would be right stuffed if Justin pulled out of the land purchase. Helen wouldn't be able to have her cheese classes, which would be classed as a silver lining, and the housing development wouldn't take place. I'm predicting that while Lillian and Matt won't get back together officially as a couple, she and Justin will break up and Justin will get back at Lillian via Adam, etc., and call it business decisions." Yes. She also says, "I am also hoping that Ian and Adam don't have a baby. As with heterosexual couples, a sticking plaster baby never works." Very true.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I just can't stand babies and crying, and I don't want any more bloody nappy changing. It's bad enough with Helen and Nick and Emma and all their bloody kids.
Yeah, but they're all past the nappy changing, apart from baby Giddy Jack. They're all past the nappy changing thing, aren't they?
I suppose. But there we are. So that's that. Right. Is that the final email now? Sorry, I'm losing my voice. Ah, there we are. That's much better.
Oh, yes, it's me, isn't it? If you would like to help keep our little show on the road, there are two ways this can be done. You can donate by hitting the donate button on the site, or you can sponsor us via patreon.com.
And remember, to get in contact, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on the website, or call 0203 031 3105. That's 0203 031 3105 to leave a message. You can find Royfield and Lucy at Dumpty Dum, and that's at Dumpty Dum. Lucy is Lucy V. Freeman on Twitter, and I can be found at Naked Fingers. And that, my good friends, is your lot.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.